Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello, I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And today on the Scummy Mummies podcast we have a very special guest. Who are you?
Daniel Varane.
It's Daniel Varane!
Hooray!
Oh, I'm very, very excited to have you.
I'm excited too because this is a dear friend of Ellie's and she has told me lots about you. She's like, you've got to meet Daniel Varane. And then, can I tell the most embarrassing story?
Do.
Okay, so they have a very lovely mutual friend, Jonathan. And he, one night, after I became single, he sent this very late night text. And he said, oh, I've got this man that I want you to meet. He's called Daniel Varane. You two are just going to hit it off. And I was like, you don't have to do this, Jonathan. That's so sweet. And then, for some reason, he put together a montage of you over music with, like, photos. Like he was presenting you. And I was like, oh, he's gorgeous. He's lovely. And in the morning, I was like, oh, Ellie, I think John's trying to set me up with Daniel Varane. And she was just like, bah, bah.
I don't think you're Daniel's type. It's nothing personal. I'm not sure anyone with a vagina is Daniel's type. Would that be fair to say, Daniel?
Yeah, I'd say it's close to the truth.
Yeah.
Let's out him in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way.
Let's define you by your sexual preferences.
Embarrassing for which one of us is that embarrassing
know.
For? I'm not sure.
I thought just let's get
I'd
it
say
out.
Jonathan, actually.
Yeah. It did present itself in a way of like, here's a possible suitor for you, Helen.
I'd also love to see it. I would really love to see it.
I'll show it to you later. We might put it in the show notes. But yes.
Who knows? By the end of the episode, perhaps you'd have changed your mind.
Well, we are in my hotel room.
This is it.
In Brighton. I mean, all sorts of things get up to in Brighton.
If I see both of you wink at me, I'll just quietly lean out the door. You can just carry on.
Can you go to Tesco's to get me some things for 50 minutes? Yeah.
Well, anyway, yes. Welcome to the Scummy Mummies conversion therapy episode.
We're better than Brighton to do this.
I feel like we once again we've just made it about us and not about our guest, Helen.
I think so.
Daniel Varane, for the listener, for anyone who miraculously has not heard of you for some stupid reason, who are you, Daniel Varane?
I am a second generation Italian immigrant, grown up in North London, love to cook, love to talk about cooking, and have recently moved down to Hove to the Coast. Where we are, hence the seagulls.
Oh, I know, we've got such ambiance. And we're down here for a couple of gigs, and we thought we would just squeeze you in, Daniel Varane, for a little podcast session. But also, you've travelled the world, and I think this is the first time we've had someone from an airline on the podcast, isn't it?
That's right.
So you were an air steward, is that right?
I was, yes, a long time ago.
And now, is it grounded? Is that the technical...
That's grounded? It. Wings clipped.
Wings clipped?
Wings chopped off and grounded, yes. But it was a wonderful time. It was probably one of the best. It was 15 years of my life. And it was absolutely... And I ended up working in Australia, too.
Did you?
Yes, I was outbased in Brisbane. Saw Australia like nobody else, I think. I saw it... I basically traced where anyone from Neighbours had moved. So... And I remember calling home to my mum and I was like, oh my God, I've just been to Hobart. And we were trying to work out who moved there, and we think it was Pam Willis's daughter.
Yeah.
Do you remember Gabby? Hot Gabby.
Yeah. And because Kylie
Gabby
and Jason,
was married to Paul.
They went to Queensland.
They went to Brisbane.
Which is where I lived, which was brilliant.
Amazing.
I loved it. Yeah, so.
I have to be honest with you, when I was a little girl, I had three career aspirations. You know when people ask you what you want to be? I wanted to be an astronaut, or a video games journalist, which I miraculously managed to achieve, or an air hostess. That was honestly, those were my three dreams. Now, I've achieved one of them. Is it too late to go for number two?
There is still... there is absolutely still time.
Well, if Jeff Bezos can go... Hang on, no, wait, I mean... yes.
So what does it take to be a really good hostess? Because I think, you know, we all know the ones instantly when you're a passenger, the ones who are warm and smile and, you know, I like a light touch on the shoulder. They're like, are you okay? Oh, like a little light...
I'm not sure we still approve that.
Maybe I just like
that
people touching me, Daniel.
Yeah.
That's not 2 metres.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
It depends if you're in a lie flat bed or not. Okay. That's how you would... determine whether it's okay to reach out and touch. Yeah. What's it take? I think you've got to love hospitality. You've got to really love people. And that for me was one of the big draws. You meet people from all walks of life, and you meet people in all various stages of their life. Like, some people are traveling for the first time, or sometimes they're traveling because someone is really ill. You've got to be compassionate. You've got to be patient. You've got to be resilient. You need a good pair of knees. Because
a good pair of knees.
I thought you said
yeah,
good.
No,
you
absolutely.
Do. You're crouching down all the time. Yeah,
Pair of knees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But is it as kind of glamorous as it looks? Because when I was a little girl, I just saw like the uniform and like I love planes, I love flying, I love all that, and I thought, oh gosh. That... But now when I get on a plane, I'm like, oh my God, this is really hard.
It's really hard, and it's not. I'll tell you if I can tell you something about my very first flight ever.
Yes,
so,
please.
I was super excited. I wanted to be an air steward my whole life, right? So I remember meeting my mum's cousin who was an air hostess when I was about six or something. And everyone was like, oh, what celebrities have you served? And where's the best place you've been? And I was like, how do you cook all the food? How many glasses do you have on board? Like, what do you do if you... I was interested in all the nitty gritty and the logistics. Anyway, so I had this first flight and it was amazing. It was wonderful. It was, I felt really... I did feel glamorous and I felt I'd achieved something. And then... at the end of the flight, this lady comes up to me and she was like devastated. She was like, I've lost my engagement ring. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, right. Where did you leave it? Where did you think it went? She goes, well, I took it off in the toilet to put some hand cream on, and I left it on the flap that
you
is on
dickhead.
Top of the bin.
Why would you
on
do it?
On top of the bin. She left it on top of the bin.
She pointed exactly to the flap and I was like, okay, all right. Well, you know, with all the zeal and enthusiasm of someone on their first flight, I opened the bin.
Oh, Daniel.
The sick bags were still warm. Through every single piece of trash in that bin, and it wasn't there, at which point she said, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I meant the one at the back. And so I had to go down and do the whole thing all over again. And as I was sat, like, you can imagine what was in there, just all this stuff, her daughter came running up and said, oh, we found your ring, you left it in the seat pocket. And the two of them just walked away, and I was sat on the floor covered in trash.
Oh my God.
So to anyone who says, is it glamorous? Yes, it can be. But there is an element of hyper-realness to the job.
She's
doing some really gross things, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, false teeth left on trays.
And that was your first date. False teeth.
False teeth left on the dinner tray. And you think, well, you must have used them to eat.
Are you taking
Where
them out
they?
To rinse your gums?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Yeah. I'll put the glue back on. I don't know. But they end up, so you're rifling through trolleys of old food. But it always happens at the end of the flight. So everything's been sat there for a good... 7 or 8 hours, kind of fermenting. There's juices, kind of.
And you've worked in first class, haven't you? And
yes,
good
I have.
Old economy.
Yes. Yeah.
Who's worse to deal with, or is it? Are all humans just
listen,
dreadful?
Well, I can't say, can I? People. So you know, there is something really nice about working in first class because you get to know the people a lot more intimately because you're working with them for a good like 10 hours straight. You're putting them to bed, you're waking them up from, you know, from their sleep, you're preparing kind of an individual, real individual service for that person, so you get to know a lot about them. But then again, you know, in economy you've got people who are families traveling together. They've got their own story as well as to where they're going and why they're going there, so you get to know them too. So in terms of the kind of disgusting things that happen to people, that happens to people whether you're paying to sit up the front or to sit at the back.
Excellent.
Yeah. I have told this story before, but on a flight to Singapore, my daughter weed so much in a seat, they had to replace the entire seat.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was a child, so it's okay. It happens a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And the woman came out with, like, plastic gloves on and just went, gunk. And then I was so surprised that they had an actual spare seat underneath. Yeah. And she went down a ladder and came back holding an entire new chair.
A new chair? Oh, my God. I know we do have about 10 or 11 seat covers for, you know.
Yeah.
If things get bumpy, shall we say, or you know, you don't know. This is a bit of a rough ride, which doesn't happen often. But, you know.
And I guess also the class in the airplane doesn't necessarily reflect. So I think, like, when I took my parents to Japan last year and I paid for them to go business class, put myself in economy because, you know, money. Sane. But because I'm such a great person.
That's lovely.
I put them in the posh class because my mum's got bad hips and legs and she couldn't go, basically, unless she could stretch out. So anyway, as I say, really good person, did all that. They turned up at the airport with one, like, hand luggage sized suitcase each, and I was like, what are you doing? And they were like, well, we didn't want to go over the weight.
Oh my
god, like,
that's so
no cute. It's business class, you can bring a fucking elephant, like, it doesn't matter. And they were like, no. And then I was like, well, fine, whatever, we got on the plane. No, on about day four I was like, dad, you've got all soy sauce and, like, squid juice down your jumper, like, can you wear a different jumper tomorrow? It's kind of embarrassing. And he went, well, I haven't got another jumper. I was like, what? And he's like, well, I've only bought one jumper. So you've bought one jumper to Japan for a week. And he's like, well, I didn't want to pack too much. I was like,
gross.
Yes, with his 10-kilo luggage allowance. What's the price of a business class ticket to Japan?
I don't even ask.
I know. My parents did something similar. Because obviously we get free flights after a certain amount of time. And the first trip I was able to use them, I put my parents into, I think they were in, business going to Miami, and I was working on the flight. It was a surprise.
Oh,
and it
lovely.
Was really cute. But they got on, and obviously because I was so worried about getting into trouble about my free flights, I was like, do not accept a massage, do not accept the luxury amenity kit, don't press the call bell, you just
have a terrible time.
Yeah, don't even go to the
don't
toilet.
Look at anyone,
don't embarrass me, don't talk to anyone,
don't your engagement your ring on the stories. Bin for God's
exactly.
sake.
Yeah, exactly. So off I went to work, and about 4 hours in, like, everything had finished, all the lights went down, and the purser came up from the front, and she said, Dan, is it your folks sitting, you know, in business? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, do you want to go down and offer them a drink or something? She was like, they haven't had a single thing, like, and I went down, and everyone had, like, lied their bed flat and was going to sleep, and my two folks were sat there, like, bolt upright like this, and she had just asked the stewardess if she could go to economy to have the dinner. I felt like I had ruined their first experience
no,
of anything.
Did.
Like,
yeah,
I completely
did.
Destroyed
them. I hope the last half of the flight was a little bit more comfortable for them.
Oh. I think so. Oh, my God, I did feel really bad after that. Like, give with one hand and then, like, literally rip it out with the other.
Oh. And what about, this is a hot topic for thought at the moment, what about naughtiness in the air? Do you get people trying to join with the Mile High Club?
Do you know, and do you turn a blind eye?
Or do you help them out?
Depends who it is, yeah. No, there is, yes, okay, so yes, it does happen. Mm-hmm. No, we don't help them out. We help them out of the toilet.
Oh,
right. You know, that's the thing, you have to, you can't turn a blind eye to it. It's not...
It's so obvious.
It's just, it is really obvious. It's quite loud. It's never quiet.
There's a real shaky, like, it rattles.
The ashtray in the door rattles. That's the giveaway.
You can hear the completion.
So, yeah, it's literally like, yes, exactly. That weird rumbling that everyone has asked about, terrified that the engines are about to fall off. Oh, no, that's just, you know.
It's just about turbulence.
That's just 56 and 57 E and F.
Oh, so when you see people, do you ever catch people going in? Do you knock on the door and politely say, excuse me, this is a fucking aeroplane? Or do you
or an aeroplane fucking... This is not...
No, we don't. It's just a very kind of loud and assertive knock on the door. There's also, you know, I won't share how, but you can unlock a door from the outside. I mean, maybe everyone knows that already.
Ooh. Yeah.
So I think very carefully before...
Have you ever opened the door to find...
Not to it? That, no.
No.
But, you know,
okay.
Normally for, like, a, you know, very very genuine reason. I don't make a habit of doing it. I should make that very clear.
Do people still try and get away with smoking?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Outrageous.
Yes. Yeah. There was this really... I think... I don't want to... I didn't want to be libelous in any way, but there was an article, and I'm sure it was Jeremy Clarkson, who wrote this article about how to get away with smoking on an aeroplane, and which was, of course, completely ridiculous and completely wrong, and it didn't work. But there was this, like, weird period afterwards where everyone, like, thought, oh, I know, according to
I'm going to do a class.
Jazza, you can go to the toilet and do A, B, and C, and it will work. And of course, it doesn't.
No.
And it is a really dangerous thing to do. And air on an aeroplane is kind of precious, so you know you're breathing a lot, and you can smell cigarettes a mile away.
Did you ever fly when cigarette smoking was still a thing?
No.
Okay.
Thank God, because it must have been absolutely disgusting.
I know. I remember a friend saying he went to Turkish Airs, and the front half was smoking and the back half was not smoking, and like the difference was absolutely fucking nothing.
The thing was, people used to say that people would get up and go for a walk in the smoking area. So if you were this unlucky person that had like checked in late, and it was like, here you are, madam, your smoking seat. You'd have been not only surrounded by smokers, but also people like wandering in for a cigarette with their whiskey and then walking back out. Which is just disgusting.
It's so awful.
Or like do you remember the little flap in the armrest that you push
down?
It's like now it's just, I guess, chewing gum in there and weird crap. Like, well, I don't think you get them anymore.
No, I think they've upgraded the handrests now. But
I was on Ryanair the other week. They've taken the fucking seat pockets away. It was like, seat pockets? We can't have seat pockets anymore. Where am I going to put my
Kindle? You can't be too comfortable. They have tight turnarounds. You need to get on and get off.
I was like, I'll give you £4 if I've got somewhere to put my Kindle, if that helps.
Oh, it's bizarre.
That's a good idea for making some more.
Yeah.
A bit of extra, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised I haven't thought of it.
I could say, you get what you pay for, Ellie, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, one fucking flight down there, wasn't it? Wasn't a choice, mate. So what about dreadful celebrities, Daniel? Have you had to do... I mean, you probably can't talk about it.
I wouldn't, because I'm a consummate professional.
That's right.
But let me tell you about the time... No, I'm joking. I have to say, that's another thing. If you're going to go into that line of work, you've got to be sensible in that respect, because people... You'd get up close and personal with a lot of celebrities, and I did. And I have to say that every single person... was wonderful.
Really?
I was really lucky. I have heard horror stories.
Yeah.
You hear horror stories about the same old people all the time, but the people that I have met are absolutely wonderful, and they've been charming, they've been really interested in, like, in our life and our stories and what we're doing and all that kind of stuff.
Because they must feel quite vulnerable. Like, they're trapped in. It's not like they can kind of fuck off if they're on a 12-hour flight to, you know, Australia or whatever. You know, there's
and
a real trust.
People sneak in to try and take pictures of
do
them.
They? Oh,
yeah,
that's,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's
shitty.
Really awful. I did a flight with... we were taking Mo Farah to... I think it was Nairobi. He was going... Lots of athletes go there to train.
Mm.
And it was before the Olympics. And he was just minding his own business. And he was the sweetest guy in the whole wide world. And people just did not leave him alone.
Aww.
They kept, like, coming through the curtain. And some people, like, taking selfies and stuff. And he was exhausted.
Okay, sorry, I thought this was a smoking area. Sorry.
And so we did our best to look after him. We moved him to a different area of the aeroplane. And we really looked after him. And he was so grateful. And funny enough, he was staying at the same hotel as us at the other end. So he came and joined us for dinner.
Oh.
I mean, he was just a dream.
Oh, that's
dream.
Really nice.
I want to have dinner with Mo Farah.
He was really, 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 really lovely. He was such a sweet guy. God, loads of them. Oh, and I remember I didn't know who David Gandhi was until I actually met him.
Oh, I don't know who David Gandhi is.
Oh, my God, you must.
Who's David Gandhi?
I have to show you a picture.
He's
a model.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, wait, with the...
He did Dolce & Gabbana adverts. You know when they're out on the boat?
So chiseled.
In the white
trunks. Oh, that one. Oh, I know him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
I'm very familiar with his work.
Oh,
you'll be thinking of him this afternoon, Ellie, after lunch.
Oh, that's one for the bank.
He's... indeed, yeah. I recall this moment often. Yeah, he was... He'd asked me for...
anything.
He asked me for this tea, and I remember I went back to the galley and I was saying to the guys, I was like, Jesus Christ, this man is just so beautiful. Well, of course, that's all it takes. If you want people to leave the galley, you just have to say seat number and attractive, and everyone's gone. Fly up. And they came back and they said, oh, that's David Gandhi. And I was like, who is he? They're like, famous international model. And I was like, oh, okay. So, of course, then there's me going back with a cup of tea. Immediately before would have been fine. I spilled the tea absolutely everywhere.
Oh, sorry, it appears to be on your trousers.
Let me
Why don't you take those off? And I'll dry them for you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, charming guy.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we do have a friend, Jonathan, who we've mentioned previously, who has a story about Diana Ross, isn't that right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe it was on your airline, by the
way.
No, it wasn't.
And it was obviously a long time ago, but she was travelling on Concorde and had with her this hat box, and she was extremely reluctant to give it up. And so ensued this tussle between the chief steward and Diana Ross with this hat box. And in the end, she was just like, oh, we'll fucking have it then. And she threw this hat box over to him. The lid came off, and out popped a chihuahua. which I guess she was hoping to house in the over. I mean, I should say it was Concord, so it
yeah, anything
been,
goes.
It
yeah.
would have, it would only been 3 hours in a little box. Maybe they can survive that.
Still, dog in a box, man.
A yeah. small, like sushi-sized pedigree charm or something. I don't know. Like,
oh wow! Been fine. Amazing, see, because you couldn't get away with any of that now. Like the security stuff is just. Because did you see the change? Like, did you...
Yeah, well, I joined after September the 11th.
Okay.
But it was very clear, like, everything is drummed into you. I joined just after, so you're fully aware that everything was easy. And also, you guys remember, like, when we used to fly when we were younger, the door was always... I used to sit in the flight deck seat. They used to bring you up and let you sit in there and stuff.
Yeah.
The idea of which is just utterly insane, if you think about it now.
Yeah, getting like, children near the controls.
Well, just, yeah. Well, no, I was thinking of people angry because of a delay. You know, oh, right. Like pushing the throttle a bit harder or something. I don't know, just, people want to complain. They want to go to the top. So they'd be marching in talking about, you know, their horrible meal or their lack of free luggage or something. Yeah, they'd be taking that to the captain straight away.
Yeah. Mm. So, just to... I'm aware that we're just now talking about the airline stuff because I'm living out my fantasy of being an air steward vicariously through your career, Daniel. Yeah. What are some tips for people? How do you be a good passenger? How do you be kind to the air staff?
Oh my gosh, how do you become? Just be kind, be polite. Understand that for every demand you have, there's another 400 people doing the same.
Yeah, and they've also got chihuahuas in hat boxes.
They've also got chihuahuas in hat boxes, yeah. And I think logically about what you're doing. Understand that booze is a lot stronger in the air.
Is it?
It's not a myth. It's true. So for every drink on the airplane, it's like having three on the ground.
No.
So people do really crazy stuff. Like they'll take a sleeping tablet and then have three gin and tonics, and then end up taking off all their clothes.
Sorry. Now, if they're David Gandhi, that's less of a problem.
Unfortunately, he didn't drink and he didn't take either. So think about that. Stay hydrated. Be prepared. Don't put your medication in a suitcase that gets checked in and then pass out. That happens all the time. Do you have medication? Yes. Where is it? In the hold. Okay.
I once turned up with an old boyfriend, turned up in Venice at midnight, and our luggage was not there. And I was like, that's all right. Well, they'll deliver it. It's fine. He's like, yeah, no, my asthma inhaler's in the luggage.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? Yeah. Anyway, it was a good time.
Did you just leave him to...
No, I went... He didn't speak. He didn't speak any Italian. I spoke four words.
I'm sure asthma is... It sounds Italian.
Asthma. That's what I went for. Yeah. So I went and found the all-night pharmacy and just mimed him having a choking attack, which wasn't difficult because I wanted to strangle him. And
did the
then
pharmacist
we...
go, there's this mad English woman trying to kill herself?
I'm pretty sure the pharmacist was saying in Italian, why the fuck would you put your inhaler in your fucking luggage, you morons? He survived the night. But then
nice that we've landed in Italy, because that's one of the reasons we've got you on the podcast, because it is currently our favourite country, isn't it, Ellie?
Yes, that's
for many,
right.
Many reasons.
Many reasons.
And I want to talk about your upbringing, because at the beginning of the podcast you were saying you're second generation Italian. And there's something interesting about second generation immigrants in countries, because their parents hold on to the time that they left that country.
Almost, yes,
the most freeze framed
right.
in that time.
Correct.
Yeah.
And all the families like mine will have the narrative of, oh, you know, your grandfather arrived with one bag, which is true. I mean, it's true. The story is true. And my parents came from an area where there was really, really, really serious rural poverty.
So they're from the north.
They're from the north. And essentially after the war, there was huge exodus of people from Italy because there was nothing there. And countries were like inviting them in. I think in my family, people came over to work in steel mills in the UK or something like that. There was this call to work. And
in the 60s, this was?
Yeah. Yes. It would have been, like early 60s, I think. Yeah, there's this story of like how they came to England. My mum grew up in a house that had one room up, one room down, but the room downstairs was for cattle. So they lived above the cattle and it used to keep their house warm and stuff like
wow.
that. So there's this idea of Italy when you're growing up of being this like rural kind of, I don't know, this rural kind of simple place that, you know. So of course, when you go as a child and it's been like 20 years since they've been back and they've got, you know, fridges and cars, you're kind of surprised about it. But of course, I was very lucky. I used to get back to Italy every year. And so I did know. But my cousins in America, for example, some of them have never been to Italy yet. And so when you go over, they're really shocked that, you know, Italy is not from the Italy of the black and white photographs that they're looking at of that rural poverty that people left behind. And the parents in those families are really keen to make sure that our traditions and language and culture continues and stays on. So my cousins in Italy always think that we are like of a kind of backward time. We've come in this bubble. And I even know because they say, like, we don't say that anymore. Like,
I don't know if you go with it. And they were like, why are you all acting like fucking Dolmio puppets? Well, yeah. What's wrong with you?
No, not quite. But then, it's like the equivalent, I think it's the equivalent of going like, oh, gee whiz. Like something from Back to the Future.
Zang.
You know, yeah, exactly. And in fact, even my cousins in Italy, in America, they think or they thought that they were fluent in Italian, but they weren't. They were fluent in a dialect that is kind of dying out almost. So it's even that makes you appear like from an era gone by, you know, that there's something very different about people. But it's something that's very important because I think as we move forwards in time, countries are not losing their identity, but everything's becoming a lot more assimilated or homogenized.
Yeah.
And so this idea of family and the cultural values of how we eat and how we interact with each other, it's really important to keep that going.
So growing up then in North London with these Italian parents, did you have a sense that the parenting style that you were, I was going to say being subjected to, do you have a sense that what was going on in your family, in your home, was different kind of culturally or in terms of parenting style to your English friends?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the first things, my granddad basically lived with us and he was there all the time. So I was constantly talking about him and I noticed that lots of my English classmates or school friends found that quite surprising that I lived with my granddad and I used to go out with him at the weekend. He didn't speak any English, even though he'd lived in England for like 30 years or something. He didn't speak a word. So I used to be his translator. And I used to go to like the chemist and like translate things about, I don't know, whatever medication.
Aspirin inhaler.
Didn't know about, like, you know, pensions and bank statements and, you know, overdraft charges and all this stuff in Italian. I knew. So that was already like one thing that was a bit different. I think our culture around eating, like, there was never a chance of me not having dinner at home, ever. Especially on a Sunday, that was just absolutely not. So that was, and I have to be honest, I'm happy about that, but at the time, looking back,
oh god, so boring.
I was so fucking annoyed about it. Like, I just wanted to go out with my friends. Like, you know, I knew that they were on a roundabout somewhere smoking cigarettes and like drinking, what was that lemon thing? Like
hooch.
And that to me was like, oh my god, you know, that's what I could be doing. Instead I'm at home, like, you know, cooking something with my mum. But actually I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah,
you don't get that time back.
You don't get that time back. But I guess, that's not to say that everyone was out drinking hooch and smoking cigarettes, but it's what I wanted to do.
I think in 90s Britain, if that's what we're talking about, I mean,
can I say that? It kind of did.
That was my recollection. Literally everyone, that's what we were doing.
And I think that was the year that I could, like, when I turned 15, was the year that, like, Picture and Pianos opened.
Oh, yes.
And that was, like, the place to go, and I could really go, and I was like, oh, my God, I'd go past the Picture and Piano in Angel and be like, oh, my friends are there. Back of my dad's car, like, you know, going to someone's, like, my granddad's house or something. But then another thing is, of course, I refer to my cousins. I'm talking about people that are technically my third or fourth cousins, but which I think lots of my English friends are like, they're not really your cousins anymore.
You can have sex with them, but it's fine.
Not for Italian people, you couldn't. I'm sure it happens, yeah, but no one really talks about it. Still, that level of incest is still taboo.
Good to clarify.
Just to make that clear. So our family is so much bigger. And I guess that's kind of like a stereotype as well, isn't it? That the families are so much bigger. Which is weird, though, because I think Italy is still it's one of the only countries in Europe where more people are dying than are being born.
Yeah, so your population is...
So the population is actually shrinking. And that's quite sad, because it means, I guess, in future that this kind of large family and that I know it's a stereotype. Not every family in Italy gets on. Lots of people hate each other too. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, they're a passionate bunch.
They're very passionate about things.
I saw it was amazing. I had lunch in, where were we? Trapea the other week. And there was this massive family of like 15 people. And four of them had a fucking Barney right outside. They didn't go outside for it. But these four lads, they went outside. It was like the movies. I'm not going to lie.
It
was like all the hand gestures. It was like, oh. And we were all sitting there going, oh, this is so cool.
Are you sure
so
it was
cool.
A Barney? Were they just having a conversation?
Well, this was it. We thought it was a Barney.
They were just talking about, you know, the colour to paint the living room.
Exactly. But it was very animated. And they were proper. And they were men. And they were getting in each other's face. And then a woman went out to have a cigarette. I thought she was going to calm things down, she just stood there smoking, and then And it was really exciting. And then, yeah, and then they all just kind of came in and sat down and ate fucking four courses. And then it turned out it was the nonna's 80th birthday, and we all sang anniversary, happy birthday, and they all laughed at my Italian. And it was all it was just marvellous. It was lovely.
It was just a standard convo. I think that was something for my partner Ryan when he first came to our house and we had dinner. There's this really weird thing when I go home for dinner. I don't know if it happens to other people, but everyone assumes their previous role in life. The table setting is exactly the same. My mum sits in the chair that she's always sat in. My dad sits in his place. And we kind of go back to this kind of slightly squabbly, a bit shouty. And afterwards, Ryan was like, do you talk like that all the time? And we shout. I mean, we actually scream. And there's a lot of like, oh, for fuck's sake. And, you know, oh, don't be so fucking stupid. And things like that. But that's just...
Yeah.
I guess the volume is turned up, right? Is that fair enough? I mean,
that's fair enough. But I'm just thinking, is that an Italian thing, or is it that my family's quite Italian? Because that sounds like a very familiar scenario where you also
are
your family, suddenly
you
all revert psychologically 20 years,
you're
all telling each other to fuck off.
Yeah.
But then, yes, also pass the potato.
Oh my god, what are you talking about? By the way, these are delicious.
Exactly.
And he just kept saying to you, whenever we get together, Ryan just, like, he goes, your poor dad. You just give it to him all the time. He just gets it from all angles. Because he's quite placid. He's quite, you know, so he'll just sit and, like, kind of, and everyone else is, like, screaming at him. And I think that's part of the reason as well, is that he's so calm. And everyone else is just so, like, rowdy. It's like, why won't you bite? You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I guess maybe in that respect we're different. Maybe not. It sounds like we're kind of similar to...
I'm just very Italian, that's what I'm saying. I'm convinced.
Well, you're learning.
I'm convinced that I'm secretly Italian, Daniel. I'm convinced that one day I'm going to find out I was adopted by these English, boring English people, and actually my name is Sophia Spaghettiana. I don't know. Something romantic.
My grandma's maiden name was Ferrari, and I've always grown up so disappointed that I didn't have that name.
Daniel Ferrari!
Danny Ferrari. I think he's also a DJ, isn't he?
I don't know.
Daniel Ferrari.
That is a cool name.
I'd marry if you were called Daniel Ferrari.
The hand just goes out.
Like, yeah.
Whether you'd like it or
Danny
not.
Danny Ferrari. Mm.
So let's talk about food then. So food, as is the stereotype, but I know it was a big part of your growing up and your family life, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. My dad had a cafe in Angel. Which my other granddad worked in, his dad worked in, and my uncle worked in. And so I was, from a really early age, employed. I use the term employed loosely because there was no pay.
Sorry.
So I used to go with, I think I was probably about 7, was my earliest recollections of going, and I used to have to get up at like 3 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and my dad used to take me to Smithfield Meat Market. And it was the most disgusting experience of my entire life. I absolutely hated it. It was so gross. But I was involved in all of it. So I was like, you know, pick this up now. And I was like, oh, God, like holding some, I don't know, carcassy bit or something that you have to get. But so from the very beginning, so in the cafe every Saturday and surrounded by food. I mean, that was quite literally the business. It was all about food. It was about prep. It was about how to avoid waste, what to do with waste. So, like, you know, things... aren't just used for today's meal. Like, there's something that will not be used for what we're cooking today that's going to be used tomorrow. So food is very important. And actually, in my family's friends, they often talk about each other within the context of where their business was or where their cafe was. So they'd be like, oh, you know, Steph from who's got the cafe on Old Kent Road, or, you know, Luigi who's got the cafe in Angel, or, you know, Finchley Road or Swiss Cottage. That's how they all kind of connected with each other. I've often thought about why they all kind of went into that. And I guess often you hear that England wasn't a very foodie place back in the 60s and the 70s and probably into the 80s, I guess. And so there was an opportunity for really amazing food to be brought to English people who were, I guess, who were working and, you know, they're not... I don't know, were people bringing packed lunches in the 60s? I'm not sure. But they would go and have, like, some really amazing food that either my... In my dad's cafe, it was a case of my mum used to make lots of the dishes at home, and they would get put into this big freezer in the garage and then taken in the next day. And then my grandma would do the same for my uncle's cafe. And so people were eating really delicious, like, home-cooked Italian food when they didn't really know much about what it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And those businesses thrived, like, they really did. And it generated more business. It generated, like, import and export businesses, all the delis that used to have around Clerkenwell, King's Cross. That's a really Italian area because of the Italian church being there. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but it's a really beautiful church.
Not a big church person, but I'm sure it's lovely.
I try to go once a year, you know, Christmas Eve. Oh. And Easter too.
Yeah, lovely. Nice.
So that was the heart of the Italian community. So, yeah, lots of delis, lots of... So food is kind of just moved with the community. Mm. And Italians won't really tolerate shit food.
Mm.
So if you go to Italy, for example, I don't think I've ever had a bad meal out.
I've had very few.
If you get ripped off, I mean, if you don't know where you're going, yes, of course. But in general, like, people just will not accept it. And also, people know so much about it anyway through their own family and their parents and stuff. So they know what a good pizza should be, or they know what a good lasagna should taste like, or they know, like, when a salad is fresh and when it's kind of not so fresh and not really to be, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Is there a danger in a rigidity around that, though? I've talked to some Italians who said to me, you know, that's great, but then the problem with that is there's one specific way that everything has to be done. And also, we don't want your Chinese food, we don't want your curry, we've got food, what's wrong with our food? Just eat this.
You are so right. They are so puritanical about their food. Like, I remember... The main example is spaghetti bolognese, right? Which technically doesn't exist. You shouldn't have spaghetti with bolognese. But who really cares? It's pasta. And actually use it if you haven't got anything else. And I made it once for a friend of mine, my Italian friend Tamara, who is... Oh, she's so picky about the food. And she was like, I'm not eating it.
What?
I was like, well, you can eat it. She was like, no, I'm not eating it. This is not Italian. This is not Italian food. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Why? What was her complaint?
She doesn't like spaghetti with bolognese. People are really fussy about pasta shapes.
It wasn't even the ingredients in the sauce.
The bolognese was quite delicious.
But it wasn't because...
The ragu was nice. But yeah, she's also really fussy with Italian. Like, if you don't use the right tense at the right time, that's another thing that they like to Well, you must know from your... lessons what they're like. They're really
The grammar is a literal nightmare, but when I try and speak it, I know I get it wrong all the time, but Italians have been very tolerant with me and sometimes they laugh in my face, but I quite enjoy that as well.
In a warm way.
In a nice way. No, people are quite pernickety, and I guess that's because culture is so important to them. And so when they have this idea of... I think, you know, Antonio Carluccio was given, like, the equivalent of an MBE in Italy for his services to food, because he had started this... He and with these other chefs, they started this global campaign against, like, shit bolognese. And they would go to these restaurants and, like, strike it down and make this, like, list of places that had got it all wrong. Again, it's because they don't want they want to keep that culture in a place where everything is becoming assimilated, I guess.
Mm.
But in terms of your point about Chinese food or going for a really good curry, probably not going to happen.
No, I lived in worked in Italy in Venice for 3 months, and I love a pizza, love an Aperol spritz, love a pasta, love a fritto misto. But I did get people from London to bring me over some curry paste because I was just craving something slightly different. I just remember I was like, oh, I need a green curry or something else. Because I think Venice is very commercial and things like that. But I just, it's funny growing up in Australia when there's such a mix of cultures and I'm used to such diversity of food. And I would eat Italian all day, all long. But yeah, after 3 months, I just wanted a different palate. You know,
we take it for granted, especially growing up in London, that you can get what you want kind of when you want. And that means whether it's prepared for you or if you have to get an ingredient from a specific shop, that specific shop will exist. And I'm sure, again, like, I'm massively generalising about Italy, but if you go to the big cities, I'm sure you can actually find it. But my life is in our small town, which is up in the mountains, and there's not even the demand. Like, if you said you were cooking Chinese food for a Chinese dish or something, people probably say, why? Well, because it's really good, the funniest thing, I remember me and my sister used to tease my granddad, and I said to him, I was like, but you know that pasta comes from China, right?
The noodles. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, it comes from China. And he was like, and the Romans, what they eat, Chinese food. That was his reply to it. He used to get so wound up by it.
Oh, no, I had amazing sushi, for example, in Rome last summer. But then a few weeks ago when we were down in the south, and it was just the season had just ended, so there weren't that many places open. There was one restaurant on the beach open, but we went there and it was lovely. And Jesse and I had shellfish and fish and all this. And my husband Pete's allergic to shellfish, and Jesse's partner Dave doesn't really eat fish. He doesn't like fish. So I was like, well, what can they have? And there was one non-fish dish on the menu, which was veal. They had veal and chips. And I was like, well, fuck it, it's a fucking seaside.
Yeah.
And then Pete and I had a fight because he was like, and he was like, and the veal wasn't very well cooked. And I was like, but it's a fuck, it's a restaurant on the beach. And you eat fish. You should have had the fish. Like, that's like going to an Indian restaurant and ordering ham, egg and chips and complaining that it's not, exactly to your fucking standards. It's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
But then my mother took his side, so I lost the argument. But anyway, it's a different time. But yeah, so what is, going back to your bolognese that your friend rejected because of spaghetti, come on, let's have it. What's the authentic Varani ragu recipe?
Okay, so you've got to start with, it's not just beef, so it's beef mince and pork mince. That's really important.
Excellent.
And start off with.
Can you use sausages if you haven't got pork mince? I've always got sausages.
Like if you take the skin off and squeeze it out?
Yeah, not
okay,
as
not
in
like whole bits of sausage. Sorry, I wasn't sure.
She's just chopping up some hot dog. Yeah, it's fine. Put it in the blender.
I just like to dip a sausage in. Like a crouton.
So half and half.
Half and half. And also start off by frying some like streaky bacon or pancetta, whatever you can find. I don't think you have to go and get pancetta. And if you cook the pancetta slowly in olive oil, some of the fat renders and it gives you that really nice taste.
Oh, yeah.
There's no garlic in a ragu recipe, in bolognese ragu, so don't put that in. Tomato paste, red wine mixed together.
No carrot, no mushroom.
Oh, sorry, I completely forgot a really important step.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Yes, the sofrito, which is celery, onions and carrots, which you have to chop really, really small. That's also really important because you kind of want them to get to a really soft, melty consistency. You don't want like a hard,
no, you don't want that. You don't want
onion in there.
No.
Then your kids won't fucking eat it. That's
exactly.
What I learned,
so you're going to go with your streaky bacon first, your onions, carrots and celery. Then you're going to add your beef and pork mince. And then you're going to mix tomato paste and red wine together. Pour that over the top and then some stock and allow that to simmer.
Not a can of tomatoes?
No can of tomatoes.
No passata?
No, I don't use passata, don't need none of that, just the stock and everything. And just let that boil and you get a really rich, dark kind of rich ragu, which is
gorgeous.
Really nice. And you should serve it with tagliatelle. That's really...
not to offend your friend.
Yeah.
So as not to offend any Italian friends visiting. So tagliatelle, the reason being is that when you twist the spaghetti, the ragu all falls off, and what happens is you end up having some kind of slightly dressed pasta at the end,
and then a big puddle of
which, if you have the tagliatelle, they kind of wrap around the ragu and capture it, or something like penne, you know, the tubes. That's really good because you can scoop the pasta in as well.
Nigel Slater puts, I think, is it milk or cream in here?
Yeah,
how do you
can
feel about that?
No, that's good.
All right,
I don't tend to do it, but the I did for a while, and I actually thought, well, and then I ran out of milk and then it kind of tasted the same. But the point is that it was used in the past to like tenderise the meat and neutralise some of the acidity from the tomato paste. But it's absolutely not essential.
And parmesan, are we putting parmesan on the end?
Yeah, parmesan on the pasta first.
Oh, this is mind blowing. Bang.
Yeah, parmesan on the pasta first. Then you put mix the sauce all together. Never do the pasta with the sauce just on the top.
Oh,
that's like a Domio advert. That's not real.
Okie dokie.
They're not real.
No. What did you used to say, like, Italy's favourite sauce, made in Holland?
So you put the cheese on, and then
you've drained your pasta.
Right.
It's gone back in the pot. Cover it with your Parmesan cheese.
Oh.
Get it stirred around. Then put your pasta and cheese into your bolognese
sauce,
ragu, mix it up, and then before you serve it, you put some more Parmesan cheese on.
Oh yeah, double cheese,
double cheese.
Oh, yes.
And that's actually, that is in the official recipe of how to prepare ragu alla bolognese in the Bologna Chamber of Commerce. It's actually registered there, as is a golden tagliatella, which is a golden template of what a tagliatella should be. I think it's 20 centimetres.
Wow. I mean, people say Italians take food too seriously.
What
don't
was
they,
I saying about being pernickety?
Amazing. I fucking love Bologna as a city.
Oh, it's like the capital, it's actually the capital of food.
Yeah. And the mortadella, fuck me, you could ride that thing. I mean, as in like a pony. It was, it's the girth of a basketball. It's extraordinary.
Wouldn't touch the sides after two kids.
It's one of my favourite meats.
Oh, I could eat mortadella all day.
Yes, I've got to be honest, Pete likes the mortadella.
Oh, I love
it's
it.
Just fucking spam
my
with nuts in.
When I was a kid, he told me it was made of donkey.
Donkey?
It's not, but he told me it's made of donkey. And he said, yeah. And I wish he was around now because his sense of humour was just the darkest, most sarcastic,
awesome,
driest sense of humour ever. And he told all of us at the table, we were enjoying these really lovely sandwiches. He used to love picking the bits of pistachio out.
Yeah, that's my favourite thing.
And he was like, oh, you kids enjoying those sandwiches? And we were like, yeah, oh my God, thanks, Johnny. They're really nice. Yeah. You know what that stuff's made of, don't you? And we were like, what? Donkey. And he was like, morta means dead in Italian, which it does.
Yeah.
And della means donkey. And we...
Dead donkey.
I knew it didn't. I knew that della wasn't donkey.
No, it means Eeyore. Everybody knows that.
So we, yeah, for many years we didn't eat it. But then actually, as with lots of stuff, you find out that you just really like the taste, so you forego.
Oh, you fucking, you know, oh, all
the sadness
day long
over the animal. Yeah.
Oh my God,
it's fucking spam with nuts in. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Now, so you've really blown our minds, Daniel, with your ragu chat. But if people want more Daniel Varani cooking tips, you've written a book, Daniel!
Yeah,
tell us about your book.
So my book, how did that come about? So I really missed going home for dinner. When I moved down to Hove at the start of lockdown, my idea was that I was going to be coming up at the weekends, finishing work on a Friday, going to stay at home. And up until that time, I would often go home for dinner on Friday or Saturday.
And to your parents' house?
To my parents' house, yeah. And my sister would be there, and we'd all be there, arguing away, calling each other horrible names, but eating some nice food in the process. I really missed it. I really, really, really missed it. And so what I started doing was having these conversations with my mum, or, you know, what are you preparing for dinner? So she was saying, well, I'm going to do this. So I started doing it. And then...
Oh, so you're cooking and
kind of
eating the same
in
as your
mum? Kind of
in
synchronicity. Oh, my God, that's adorable.
And then I started taking pictures of what I had done and sent them home to her to look at. And I don't know, this idea came about storing them somewhere, and one of my friends very helpfully but kind of bitchily said, oh, don't be one of those people that post photos of their food on Instagram. And I was like, oh, okay, you bastard. So I set up a separate Instagram and started photographing food, and it just like built some traction. And then eventually someone said, oh, you know, you should put these all together in a book. And that's what happened, that's what I did. And it was about like just sharing some of the memories around particular meals or when we would eat certain foods. And of course, like when Christmas came, that was really painful because I'd never had a Christmas away. Well, one, when I was living in Australia, and that was weird for all kinds of reasons. I don't like eating prawns at Christmas and it being like sunny outside.
I'm so sorry. Jesus. I hate it. Warm weather and lovely seafood. Ooh.
I hate being surrounded by gorgeous men on Bondi Beach.
Don't we all?
Being fed seafood. Actually, that's a very different... That's actually quite nice, I realise.
No, it's too fucking hot.
Yeah, no. That was... So... you know, and we made like a agnolini in brodo, which are like these pasta parcels filled with parmesan cheese and breadcrumbs, and they said a really rich like chicken broth. And
fuck me.
It was really nice. And so it was about, well, when do you have these? And I was explaining to Ryan a lot of the time, like when we would have what it was.
So Ryan, your partner, is not Italian.
He's not Italian.
Right.
He's of Irish heritage.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so that was mainly it. And lots of the memories came up about like, you know, in the run-up to Christmas, making those agnolini with my nonna. Well, I didn't make them. I used to have to do, like, sweep the floor or, you know, bring more flour over, because that was their role, and I had mine. So it was a book about just sharing those reflections around food and how to make stuff, actually, that I thought, before I started making, was really difficult stuff. And actually, it's not. Lots of it's just about being a bit well-organised, which I'm generally not, but I try, and just having the recipe to follow. Nothing is really complicated. It's just various stages of assembly and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And people liked it. People responded, and so it kind of pushed me to go a bit further.
I love it. And obviously, you might be listening to me, or you would say it, it's your friend, but honestly, I got my copy of the book and I just love it. The photographs are beautiful. The recipes are fantastic. But most of all for me, genuinely, it is the writing. And I don't think that's just because I know you. I think... It's the tone that I love recipe books, and it's the tone that I like, and it reminds me of Nigella and Nigel Slater, of it's someone talking to you. It's not just like, and this dish originated in 1898, and make sure you go and buy the most expensive parmesan. It's not all that. It's like chat, like this is why this recipe, and this is how it's like this, and you can try this, and you're not very rigid, you're not very like, and this is how it must be done. And like, you've been on this podcast, you're actually quite flexible. So I like... in your tone. But I honestly, Daniel, I love it. I love it. And I'm so in awe of you.
Gosh,
I'm not going to say proud
so
of you because that's slightly patronising, but I'm honestly in awe, and I wish I could write about food like you. It's brilliant.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you very much. I love putting it together. It was just something about eating, which I do a lot of, is so special.
Mm.
And it's nice to just... I know, I'd never really thought about articulating it before, but actually had a lot of time as well during lockdown to think about it.
Yeah,
I think we all got into Italians in very different ways in the last year.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Please tell us.
Well, some of them got into us.
Oh, wonderful lovers, Italian, I must say. They're my favourite.
Is that true?
Yeah. My top...
Bit racist.
Is it?
Is it?
It's just a statement of fact.
I know, but I say that to other single women. They're like, oh yeah, Italians, they know how to service a lady.
Hospitality.
Yeah.
Generosity of spirit.
That's right.
Well, let's find out now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We'll be right back.
Back after this break.
In sexuality.
I'll put the advert there. Oh, sorry, have you got any cigarettes? Anyway, moving on. Thanks, Daniel. Yes, and also your book, it doesn't just have photos of the food. It has these lovely photos of Italy, but also your family. Your Uncle Johnny's in there that you were just talking about, isn't he?
He's in there, actually, in their cafe, which was on Finchley Road. Back
holding a pie with a pair of donkey's ears sticking out of it.
Yeah, so that was my on my mum's side of the family. That was where they first set up their business, which was on Finchley Road. And then there's photos of my dad in his cafe, which I think you enjoyed. There was a picture of where the house is, where our family comes from. It's called Vernasca. It's just the most beautiful, beautiful place. And it was also because I hadn't been able to go to it. I've not been to Italy now for like 2 years, I think, when I used to go at least once a year. I really, really missed it. And it's such a beautiful place where we grew up. There was, you know, again, surrounded by food, but in a different way, because we had plum trees, fig trees, peach trees, walnut trees, peppers. I don't know, bloody everything was growing there. And so it was nice just to reminisce and kind of have a tangible thing that made me feel a bit more connected to it.
And also because your partner works in the NHS, so he was away a lot of the time, out of the house a lot of the time
he was
in lockdown.
Really, really long shifts. And what was really nice was being able to like cook really nice food for him as well. And he came home and just would have some really nice food waiting for him. And
you'd put the bolognese on the table and give him a little clap. Is that what you did every day? That's what I'd do.
And then I said, now you clap for me, right?
Clap for me.
So that was really nice because I was able to like look after him, because the shifts that they were doing were crazy and some of the stuff they were dealing with sounded absolutely horrific. And I would never be able to even begin to understand what that feels like for those people that were working in it during that pandemic. So that also felt nice. But I should say, actually, that if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have written the book. I was very lucky to have him there kind of pushing me to do it. And when, you know, you have these moments where you think, I didn't plan to do this, now I'm doing it, who cares? Like, who's going to want to read it? Who cares about my bolognese on spaghetti that should be on television? You know what I mean? Like, so he was there pushing me and really just given me that space as well when I needed it to crack on and write stuff and taste the food as well.
And now you're doing, you were saying you're doing dinner parties in Brighton.
Yeah.
I'm just going to flog you now. I mean, not in that way.
No, flog all the things, Daniel.
We did that already.
You did, did you do the
communal break?
I did little
meal kits. Right. So I sent out, they were like meal kits with a couple of recipe cards in. I think there was 3 recipes in each meal kit, so you could have like a starter, main and dessert. Mm. With a Spotify playlist, like QR code on the side. So it was kind of fun. That was really good fun. So I'll probably do some of those again at Christmas. But at the moment, I'm looking at dinner parties and catering for parties. And I've done some cooking workshops as well in people's houses. So we've done like a pasta making workshop, which was really nice. What I need to be careful of is that I have to remember that the Prosecco is for my guests.
Did you get shit-faced at your pasta?
Or you just end up sitting down with my legs crossed, going like, "Yeah, okay, bring it over here. I'll have a taste."
Like airplanes? You have to remember that Prosecco at the pasta party is like 3 times.
Yeah, exactly. That too. Yeah. So those have been really fun, and we just go through making some really lots of Italian food. Is really simple, but it's actually quite elegant, and I think that's what has been the biggest surprise for lots of the people that I've worked with in these cooking classes is that they'll make something like really, really simple, like a homemade pesto that they've never made before. Put it together with some pasta and actually it ends up being like one of the most delicious lunches you've had, or learning to make arrabbiata with chilies, for example, that in the summer I was taking ones from my house. You can buy a chili plant and you can make, you know, arrabbiata yourself. Teaching people how to make carbonara properly, which is like 3 ingredients, I think. And people are like, "Oh, there's no cream, or there's no cheese, there's no like soft cheese or anything like that." And you're like, "No, it's just working with the eggs and good quality ingredients." And people really enjoy the kind of the camaraderie in that session. Like you're making the pasta, you're making the sauces, I'm drinking the Prosecco.
Smoking a cigarette, going, wrong.
Yeah. Also, I have to remember they're not my family, so I have to speak to them really politely. Lesson 1, don't swear at guests. So that's going quite well, and it's good fun. It's really fun actually seeing people enjoy the recipes that I've put together. I mean, the carbonara is not my recipe. You may be surprised. I didn't invent it. But just showing people how to make it and seeing how delighted they are when they actually taste it. It's really, really, it's a good experience.
Yeah, I remember the first time I made proper pesto and being like, "Oh my God, this is not related to the stuff in the jars that you bought. Like, this is completely different stuff." To the point where my fucking children won't eat it. That drives me up the wall. They'll eat the shit that's been boiled within its life.
Yeah.
They won't eat fucking, you know, 5 quid's worth of fucking basil and parmesan.
Oh my God.
Parmesan or pecorino?
Pecorino.
Oh, I love I eat pecorino like an apple. Like, it's so good. Generates all those sort of amazing kind
But that said, can I just say, sorry, about pecorino and parmesan or whatever, like what we were saying about being rigid and you know, when I grew up, that wasn't the case that my mum would be like, "Oh, I'm going out to get pecorino."
Yes, pecorino time.
You probably couldn't get it. So they're like, "Well, what have I got?" So you use parmesan. Oh, God, there's going to be some people like being like, "Oh my God, this guy, what's he saying?"
Correct.
You just use, you know, I'm not saying to you this is the regimented correct way of doing it. But in terms of the final result, if you're cooking for your family, then, you know, it doesn't have to be pecorino. If you've got parmesan, use parmesan.
Yeah.
If there's 2 parmesans and it's a bit difficult to get the one that costs 8 quid, get the one that costs 2 quid. Like, it's, you know, don't...
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a stressful experience, and it shouldn't be like, "Oh God, I've got to drive to this really far away Italian deli in King's Cross to buy the right cheese." Mm. You can use it. And sometimes I've made pesto where I haven't made it with pine nuts because I thought, I don't feel like spending £5 on a bag of pine nuts today, so I've used whatever I've got. You can make you can make pesto with all kinds of different ingredients.
Literally
as well.
Anything.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, one time I just didn't have basil, so I just used some grass off the lawn. It was absolutely fine.
Lovely. Very fresh.
But I remember being about 12, and I don't think I saw a recipe in a book for carbonara, and I don't think I'd ever had it, and I was like, "I'm going to cook that." I was quite into cooking even then, and my mum was like, "Yeah, fine, go for it." And I was like, "Oh, parmesan, we don't have any parmesan." And she was like, "Oh, just use cheddar." I was like, "Yeah, fine," and I did, and it was lovely, and that's how
I'm not sure about that.
I'm trying to see where your line is.
We've now taken it too far.
No, I don't make it like that anymore. But for years and years, and when I was a student, that's what I made it with, cheddar.
Egg and cheddar. Yeah.
But also you're using what's available and you're making something from scratch. And that's really important. I think that teaches you to kind of respect yourself and respect the food, the ingredients that you're using. So if you've got cheddar, fine, make it with cheddar. Did it taste nice? Did you love it?
Yes, for many years. And then I started making it with Parmesan when I could afford Parmesan. I was like, oh no, yeah, this is nice. But really I enjoyed the cheddar years, man. Yeah. They were good
years. Cheddar chapter. Yeah. There's a really amazing recipe as well. I don't know if you've seen it. It's in Nigella Lawson's book, and she had this whole avalanche of trolling after it, which was pasta with Marmite. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's delicious.
It is delicious. Yeah. And it was really cute because I remember seeing on this blog where she put, like, I wrote it with Anna Del Conte, like, trying to justify, because all these people were like, what the hell have you done? This is a disgrace. But actually, that's two really simple ingredients, butter. Well, three. Spaghetti, butter and Marmite.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and it's absolutely delicious.
So yummy.
I don't know what the cost of that is. Is it like 11p a portion? I don't know. It'd be tiny.
Not a umami for your 11p, though. Yeah. And her carbonara recipe, I love it. It's one of my favourite pieces of food writing ever, where she talks about this is a thing that you should cook on the first time you spend the whole night with a new partner, and how you should just make it in the pan and then take it back to bed in the pan. And I'm always like, it's so romantic, and also I'm a bit horny now. It's lovely.
And I did that recently, a couple of months back with a really lovely young Italian chap, and he said, I will come and cook you carbonara. I've mentioned on the podcast before, and it was such a joy that felt like that he was trying to tell me that he liked me in that kind of way, and we grated the parmesan and pecorino together, and he made it, and this is like, oh, this is how I make it at home. And it was a really, and he stayed overnight and all that sort of stuff. Lovely times. But yeah, I really like when men, because I'm dating at the moment, offer to cook me dinner. And it's happened a few times. I just think, it does make such a difference. It feels like such a nice, it's not just, oh, I'm just here for a quick shag, see you later, bye. There's
for a shag and food.
Yes, exactly.
Which is really all I ever want.
I'll
from
fit
life,
you up in two honest. Ways. Yes.
That'd be fine by me. That's all
put it
I
in my tummy, put it in my anyway.
Put it in my ear, a-hole, I don't mind. We're all here for Bellissimo. A good time.
Yeah. Oh. The dish.
Oh yes. Oh, that's it. Where do you put the olives?
Oh dear. Anyway, back to your book, Daniel. What is your book called, and where can people find it?
So it's Danny's Kitchen Simple Italian Handbook, and you can go onto my Instagram, which is Danny's Kitchen_Hove, and there's a link there to my website where you can get the book. Yeah,
we'll put it all in there. And do follow him on Instagram for lovely pictures of lovely food.
Calming and
I love pictures of food on the internet. I love it.
So
it's brilliant. Amazing. Now, we should finish off, as always, Henthorne, with our Scummy Mummy Confessions. As I like to mention, I was recently in Italy, and we got the Stansted Express home from the airport. And my six-year-old son, we were on the train. It was quite, you know, they're weirdly quiet, those airport trains, always, because everyone's
tired.
Knackered.
Yeah.
And my six-year-old son just went, we're all going to die. And we were like, and you know, I've read parenting books about how you're supposed to, you know, not just shut it down, just to go, okay, why do you think we're going to die? And he's like, there's an assassin on the train. And we were like, okay, darling, yes, fine. Yes, and he's like, yeah, we're all going to die. We're all going to die on this train. And we were like, shh. Anyway, do you want to look at your comic again? And we were all sort of laughing about it. The funny things kids say. And then suddenly my mate looked at his phone. And he was like, yeah, they're just evacuating. The train hadn't left yet. And he was like, we're just evacuating Stansted because there's an unexplained package been left in the middle of the airport. And we were like, oh, God,
what does he know?
My child's either a psychic or a terrorist. What's going on? And luckily, clearly, it was fine. The package was nothing. The train left. We were fine. But yeah, I'm terrified of my own child. So a lovely story. A lovely way to end a lovely family holiday.
That is a nice thing.
Daniel, do you have a scummy story for us?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about it. And I don't have children yet. But I have some wonderful godchildren. And the first time that I looked
You're
after...
You're an actual godfather?
I am a godfather. Not the, but a. So I was looking after Rory, my goddaughter, and it was the first time I had her. She was still a baby at the time. And it was my first, like, afternoon with the child. So I was, like, you know, feeling pretty cool. And we went to this gorgeous cafe in Stoke Newington, and she loved tuna sweet corn. So I ordered, like, a small thing of tuna and sweet corn, and she was, like, eating. And then I could smell like shit, basically. And I was like, okay, all right, first test, let's go. So like bundled all this stuff up. I mean, well, the child, and went downstairs to the bathroom to try and unpackage her from this like dungaree set and winter jacket.
Oh, why would you put a baby in dungarees? They've made an error there. That's not fair.
There were so many clothes on her, and with each layer, like the onion, it was like getting worse. And then eventually, you know, I got to the source, and I
literally
physically heaved. And I couldn't do it, so I just buttoned everything back up.
Daniel!
And then, because I thought, well, she's not crying, it's just because of me that we're here, because she wasn't complaining. I could smell it. So, and then I just took her back to her mum, was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I've got to go into work. Like, and, but the poo justice came, because years later, her mum and Rory came over to my house, and they came with their baby brother, and he pooed himself, so Sophie took the nappy off. And I was really concerned with the fact that Rory was getting jam hands all over my TV. Totally lost focus on the baby, who went into my bedroom and shat on the floor. And then he stepped in it with his little feet and walked it round to my side of the bed. Because it was originally on Ryan's side of the bed. So I was like, well, that's fine. It doesn't really matter. And he walked it round. The carpets are light.
Oh, Daniel. Yes. Don't have night carpets and children carpet. In your house.
I won't ever again.
Carpets all children.
Yeah, and the jam handprints are still on the TV. I don't have to get it off. Yeah, so that's all my fault, because I should have just changed that baby when I had the chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Daniel Varani, you are a scummy mummy. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So what a wonderful story. Thank you so much.
What a journey we've been
that.
On, Ellie.
We've been to Italy. We've had shit on our carpet. We've been in the air. We've joined the Mile High Club. We've had it off in your hotel room. We've had a threesome. It's been a magical, magical journey.
It has.
Yes. So once again, your book, Danny's Kitchen.
Yes, Danny's Kitchen _Hove is the Instagram, and it's Danny's Kitchen Simple Italian Handbook.
Yes, and it's honestly beautiful. I gave some for Christmas presents last year, because it's just lovely. It's lovely. Wonderful. Well done. We've got a shop and that, haven't we? ScummyMummyShop.com.
And we're touring up and down the country. Go to ScummyMummies.com for all those sort of details. My book's still out, Get Divorced, Be Happy. It's available in Australia and over here, and you can listen to it on audiobook. And on the audiobook, Ellie, of course, narrates her own chapter.
I do some of the audio in that very book, Helen. Mm. One take, absolutely fine. No problem. professional. But yes, going back to our shop, because I would like to make some money out of all
yes,
the
very
fucking,
good idea.
Things we've invested in it. Yes, you can get wine mugs, Helen. You get mugs that say wine mug on them.
Unbelievable.
That's what you can get, a gin mug now. I think we're going to bring back the mulled wine mugs
For Christmas. And we're going to bring out a divorced and single range of things. And we've got a few more different, like we've got a crop tea, we've got a scoop neck tea, all the teas.
Boxy tea now.
Boxy
got
tea,
a boxy
yeah.
Thing?
Yeah.
Do you like a boxy tea, Daniel?
What's a boxy tea?
It's a tea that's boxy, you moron.
we're also thinking about branching out into joggers. I mean, because that's what everyone
thinking
needs.
Thinking about joggers. We're going to bring back the Jingle Bells jumpers. Mm. And what's the idea I came up with for your range,
this is
Helen?
So good. Single bells.
Single bells! Single bells! That's the money shot right there.
We should put that in the show. Single bells.
Single bells. Fuck off, you're a prick. I don't know, just thinking off the top of my head.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, that.
Yeah, yeah,
let's
yeah.
write that after
yeah, yeah.
lunch. Right, excellent. Oh, Daniel Varani.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on
thank
the podcast.
Thank you for having me, it's been lovely.
Oh, absolute joy.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Until next time.
Bye-bye!
It's always a pleasure, it's always a joy.
Oh.
I feel lighter.
I do. Too. Yeah, it's because we haven't had any breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We've just been smoking cigarettes and drinking grappa. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.